Good evening, everyone. Thank you again for joining us. And tonight, as we did last week, I'd like to discuss a theme from Megillas Esther as we continue to prepare for the upcoming Purim celebrations. So as we did last week, we started with one theme and then added just a bit to it. So to tonight, tonight's theme, we will be presenting a thought from Rav Meir Goldwicht Shlita in his Sefer Meir Panim. And then we will expand upon that theme just a bit. So Goldwicht, in one of his many, many insights in the Sefer, poses the following question. We look in Megillas Esther, at the very end of the Megillah, now in Perek Tes. We'll pull up the Sefer, Megillas Esther, and you can see here in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel, in Perek Tes. This is after the Jews have been given the right to attack preemptively their enemies in the entire Persian Empire, and the Megillah reports, Bayamahu, on that day, Bam Mispar Haharugim B'Shushan HaBir Lefnei HaMelech, the king receives the reports of the number of casualties in Shushan HaBira. And the king then says to Esther HaMalka, in Shushan HaBira the Jews killed 500 men and the 10 sons of Haman. And the king then asks, Esther, what more would you like? Masha l'seich v'yinasin lach u'mabakasha seich od v'seyas. And Esther says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, well, if you are willing and approving, yinasin gam machar la'yehudim asher b'shushan, you should allow the Jews in Shushan to also, tomorrow, do the same. Kedas hayom. Let them do the same tomorrow as well. And the Megillah then tells us that the king approves, and the Jews on the 14th of Adar, in addition to the 13th of Adar, gather together yet again, and they kill an additional 300 men in Shushan. And then Pasuk Tezayin, the Megillah concludes by telling us that the Sach HaKol, the overall totals of the enemies of the Jews who were killed in the rest of the Persian Empire on Yud Gimel Adar, they killed 75,000. And in Shushan, on the first day, Yud Gimel Adar, they killed 500. And on the second day, Yud Dalet Adar, they killed an additional 300. And the question is the following. If they killed 75,500 on the first day in all the Persian Empire, including Shushan, including 10 sons of Haman, all on Yud Gimel Adar, what was the purpose in requesting yet another day? That second day, after all said and done, seems to have added just an additional 300 more deaths. What was so critical? If already 75,500 were killed around the entire Persian Empire, including Shushan, what was gained by the additional day of killing just 300 more in Shushan? Why did Esther request that additional day? That's the question. And this question is posed by a number of Mefarshim. In Sefer Mishpatos Zav, for example, he suggests, well, maybe in Shushan in particular, there was a need to have an extra day to fight and kill the enemies because Shushan, we know, was the hotbed of the Amalekite anti-Semitism. Maybe that's where they really had to go at it yet again because there still was some unfinished work they still had to do. Okay, that's one possibility in which Sefer Mishpatos Zav cites. He suggests, well, perhaps the reason to add yet another day was for the following. And this he cites from Sefer Shemen Hamor and also from the Chasam Sofer, that although there was such tremendous success on Yud Gimel Adar in killing so many of the enemies of the Jews, yet people might have been inclined to attribute it all to the constellations, the mazalos. This was the day. This happened to be the day, which was just the best day that was conducive for the Jews being victorious over their enemies. And Esther wanted to show it has nothing to do with just the day. This is the Yad Hashem. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is Yeshua Hashem Kerev Ayin. This is Nisim V'Neflos B'Sol HaTeva. Don't give me excuses, explanations, rationalizations. Oh, Yud Gimel Adar, that was the day that they happened to know was the day that it would just happen to work. No, no. This has nothing to do with constellations, with the day, with whatever justification you will use to label it with luck, fortune, nothing of the sort. This happened Yud Gimel Adar because it was Yad Hashem. It could happen Yud Dalet Adar also, just as much Yad Hashem. Perhaps that was the reason why Esther wanted to pursue further for another day, although seemingly unnecessary as far as the battle itself was concerned, but to make the point that this is all Yad Hashem and don't attribute it to anything else other than Yad Hashem. Perhaps that was the reason. So again, cites Sefer Mishpitzos Zahav. Rav Goldbach, however, suggests an alternate approach. And he suggests that perhaps if we take a look at what Amalek represents, we'll have an added insight into why Esther felt it was so important to add yet another day to this battle against Amalek. And to do that, we look back first in Parshas Beshalach and in the Mechilta there in Parshas Beshalach. We find as follows, end of Parshas Beshalach, Torah describes, Vayavo Amalek Vayilochem Im Yisrael Berefidim. Amalek comes and battles with Israel in Refidim. So the Mechilta tells us the following. What was their strategy? What did they do? What kind of battle strategy did they employ in fighting the Jews? Mechilta says, Vayavo Amalek Rabbi Yeshua Omer Shahaya Nichnas Tachas Anane HaKavod. They surreptitiously snuck in beneath the Anani HaKavod, Vigonev Nefashos Miyisrael Vaharagon. And they would kidnap, snatch Jews to kill. It sounds like one at a time. It wasn't an all-out attack. It was one here, one there. And the pasuk that the Mechilta then cites from Parshas Kisetze, it says, Va'ata Ayef V'yager, you were tired out. Almost seems as if the Mechilta is describing this as a war of attrition of sorts, wearing them down. It wasn't an all-out confrontation, masses clashing on the battlefield. It was rather one at a time, grab one here, grab one there, and it was intended to wear down the Jews, to wear them down. And in fact, we know from Parshas Kisetze itself, in Perek Chafei, when the pasuk there describes the battle as Asher Karcha Baderech, Amalek happened upon you on the road, Vayizanev Becha is a word that evokes the meaning of the tail, Kol HaNecheshalim Acharecha, all those that were weakened and behind you. And Rashi tells us, what does this refer to? Who did Amalek attack? All the ones who had lost strength because of their sins, says Rashi. They were expelled from the camp of Israel. They were lagging behind. They were the ones behind the Anani HaKavod. Once again, the stragglers, if you will, the most vulnerable, the loners, the ones who were behind the rest of the people. Like we said before, this is not a mass versus mass of soldiers on the battlefield clashing in an epic battle. No, this was, they found a straggler here, a vulnerable lone Jew over there, one at a time. The Nechashal Macharecha, the weak ones, the ones straggling behind. This was the Makas Zanov, the way of snipping away at the tail, if you will. This was Amalek's strategy. Vata Yefi Yogeya, it wears the Jews down. It wears them down. They get tired out. and they get disillusioned, discouraged. They fall into despair. And we look back now at the Mechilta in Parshas Beshalach again, and the Mechilta describes a little bit more about Amalek's strategy. Rabbi Nassan ben Yosef Omer. Rabbi Nassan ben Yosef says, Chameshes Amimim Posa Uba Amalek. Amalek had to travel through the territory of five different nations in order to reach Klal Yisrael. This wasn't that it was convenient. The Jews were passing by the borders of Amalek, so they just reached out and attacked here and there. Sniper attacks, if you will. No, they plotted assiduously, carefully. They traveled long distances, passing through the territory of five different nations to encounter and to attack Klal Yisrael. And even then, it was only from behind. A sniping here, over there, grabbing over there, kidnapping here, a killing here. Uba Amalek v'asa milchama im Yisrael. And the Medrash cites the pasuk, Amalek is Yoshe Beretz HaNegev. Amalek was way down in the south. The Chiti, the Yavusi, the Amori, they were all closer to where Klal Yisrael were. So writes the Medrash. And what you therefore perhaps see from these descriptions in the Mechilta and in Rashi and Kisetze is something very telling about the strategy of Amalek. If they're traveling great distances to attack Klal Yisrael, and even then, they don't just unleash en masse, even then it's very, very carefully, patiently plotted. Oh, there's a straggler. There's a loner. There's a vulnerable Jew. Kill him. Kill her. Kidnap this one. Kidnap that one. You get a sense of patience, a sense of careful strategic planning, and a sense of just wearing the Jews down. One Jew at a time, wearing them down. And Amalek was perfectly content with this very disciplined and controlled expression of their hatred for the Jew. It wasn't a violence that just exploded uncontrollably. It was a very calculated evil that was planned and plotted to exact a maximum effect to the detriment of the Jewish people by slowly wearing them down one person at a time. That seems to be what Amalek represents. And if this is the Amalek of the battlefield in the Midbar, in the biblical desert, then the Amalek of today in our Avodas Hashem day-to-day, our Ruchnius representation of Amalek, adopts a similar approach. And Rav Goldwicht cites the Arizal, a fascinating insight into the following pasuk. The Arizal on this pasuk, pull this up. Here we go. In Bereishis Perek Vav Pasuk Hei. Vayar Hashem ki rabba ra'as ha'adam ba'aretz. God sees that the evil of man is exceedingly great. V'chol yetzer machshavos libo, and all of those thoughts and desires of his mind, the sinful thoughts and desires and conspiracies, rak ra kol hayom, is just bad and evil all day long. And the Arizal notes that those last words, rak ra kol hayom, the last letter of each, when combined, spells Amalek. That, in a spiritual sense today as well, the Yetzirah, that inner drive to do evil, also represents an Amalek. But what does that mean, rak ra kol hayom? Bad all day? Are we really that rotten to the core? Bad all day? all day that we're bad? Is that really true? That's all we think of all day long? Just taiva, chait, yetzahara, sin? Is that what it means? Or perhaps what the Arizal here says the pasuk is alluding to is that that spiritual representation of Amalek that is with us on a regular basis, the Yetzihara, the Satan, that desire to sin, that temptation that is constantly nipping away at us, is also an Amalek of sorts, in that there is a constant battle that is being fought, perhaps in small steps. But the Yetzihara, the Satan, much like the Amalek of the biblical Midbar, the Yetzihara, the Satan of today, is constantly looking and patiently looking to wear us down. One small Nisayon at a time, one small temptation at a time. And if not successful today, he'll try again tomorrow. This challenge in our Avodas Hashem, this ongoing battle with our personal Yetzihara personification of Amalek, is also a slow, gradual, consistent process. And one can never, ever, ever let up one's guard, because the Yetzihara never leaves one. And no matter how long one lives, there's always that taiva for one thing or another. The taiva, the attraction, might change as years go by, but there's always something nagging at us to drag us down from further growth in our Avodas Hashem. It's the rock kol hayom. It's the consistent, steady battle that one fights against the Amalek within us. And so now, looking back at the Megillah, Rav Goldlicht has some fascinating, beautiful ha'aras here. Look now at Parakeh. Parakeh, we find in Pasuk Tes. Vayetze Haman Bayomahu Samech Vetovlev. Haman goes out on that day after having secured Achashverosh's consent to carry out his extermination of Klal Yisrael. He's thrilled, he's joyous. V'kiros Haman es Mordechai. And as Haman sees Mordechai, B'shar HaMelech, in the gate of the king, V'lo kam V'lo zami menu, and he does not move, V'yimale Haman al Mordechai chema. And Haman is furious, he's filled with anger. So that phrase, velo kam, velo zamimenu, simply understood means he didn't get up and he didn't move in the presence of Haman. Referring, of course, to Mordechai refusing to bow. So Rav Goldlicht suggests very insightfully as follows. Beautiful reading of the pasuk. He says, well, maybe velo kam, velo zamimenu. What does the word mimenu mean? He didn't stand up and he didn't move from him? That seems to be a bit of an odd formulation. Velo kam velo zamimenu. He didn't get up and move from him. You mean to say when he walked by, he didn't get up and stand and bow to him? Why the word velo kam velo zamimenu? So Goldbach suggests beautifully as follows. He says, perhaps the word velo kam velo zamimenu means the following. Where did Mordechai learn this tenacious approach from? Where did he derive that inspiration from? To be persevering to that extent of sticking to his principles day in, day out. Velo kam velo za, the fact that Mordechai did not get up and did not move, was mimenu. He learned that from Haman himself. If Haman can be so persistent in his plot to act on his hatred of the Jew, and he's willing to carefully plot and to plan and he's going to pick that one day that in his mind is the most auspicious for his plan to be carried out. And even if it's going to be months and months and months away, he's going to be patient and he'll wait until that day comes, because that gives him his greatest chance of success. If Haman can pursue his evil vision with such tenacity, such persistence, so velo kam velo zam mimenu. So then Mordechai derives from Haman that same drive to persevere, but of course to use it properly for Avodas Hashem purposes. And as perhaps a remes to this pshat, which is also very, very fascinating, Rav Goldoff points us to a famous pasuk in Tehillim, well-known pasuk, Me'oivai techakmeni mitzvosecha ki le'olam hili. What does that pasuk mean? David HaMelech says, Me'oivai, from my enemies, techakmeni mitzvosecha. Your mitzvos make me wise. So they're showing them their debate. What does this mean exactly? Radak, Rashi, others. Rav Goldoff suggests, maybe what he means is as follows. Me'oivai, it's from my enemies, techakmeni mitzvosecha, that I learn, that I find, ironically enough, this lesson of how to pursue mitzvos in Avodas Hashem. This drive, this perseverance, the tenacity that's entailed in succeeding in growth in Avodas Hashem. Being relentless in seeking that growth in Avodas Hashem. Being relentless in perfecting one's Shmiras HaMitzvos. Being that consistent, that persistent, where does that lesson come from? Me'oivai. I can learn this from even my enemies. If they have such a persistent drive for evil, then how much more so we should use that same koach of persistence that the human mind can marshal for the purposes of Avodas Hashem. And this same idea suggests, Rav Goldoff, you can find yet again elsewhere in the Megillah. Perek Gimel. The servants of the king challenge Mordechai. Why are you violating the king's command, not bowing down to Haman? And the next pasuk Dalad, Vahi ke'amram elav yom v'yom. This happened each and every day. Each and every day. Mordechai, day in, day out, he is consistent. And this was for years, because Esther was taken into the king's palace. In the beginning of the Megillah, we read about it. In the seventh year of the king's reign, it was Chodesh Teves, the seventh year of the king's reign. The Gezerah of Haman was passed in the 12th year of the king's reign. So this is, you know, Mordechai is persistent with not budging from his principles for as long as Haman is there in the king's palace. He's not budging from his principles of not bowing to Haman, whether it be day in, day out, whether it be year after year, yom by yom, they're going to ask him. He's not going to budge. He's not going to give in. And the same is true with regard to Mordechai's care and concern for Esther. As described in Perek Beis, here as well. B'chol yom b'yom, each and every day, Mordechai is walking by the Chatzar Beis Hanoshim to see how Esther is doing. Esther is then taken to the king's palace, and she doesn't at all reveal her identity for years, 5 years. She doesn't reveal her identity to Achashverosh. This same theme of relentless adherence to principle, whatever it might be, not bowing to Haman, checking in on Esther, keeping one's identity secret, was persistent and consistent with a constancy that lasted day in, day out, year after year. There's a theme here. Amalek, their strategy, modus operandi, is all about patient persistence. Of course, unfortunately, employed for the sake of doing evil and harming Klal Yisrael. Their hatred is calculated, cold and calculated, and carefully plotted. as to how to express it. And so too, in combating Amalek in the Megillah, Mordechai and Esther employ that same midah of persistence and consistency, day in, day out, year in, year out. And here is something fascinating. Why is it that we read the Megillah twice on Purim, both at night and during the day? Ordinarily, whenever there's a mitzvah, so you do it once, do it at night, do it during the day. Chanukah candles, only at night. Dalet Kosos, only at night. Hallel, only during the day. And all of a sudden now comes Purim and the Megillah is both at night and at day. Why both at night and at day? You think that for the Zikaron, for the remembrance of what we're looking to eternalize here, one should be sufficient. Choose it, night or day. Why both? And the Gemara here tells us the following. The Gemara says, Megillah Daf Dalet. Amar Aleph, Shmuel Levi says, Chayav Adam Likros Es HaMegillah B'Layla V'Lashanosa B'Yom. A person must read the Megillah at night, and notice the very interesting phrase the Gemara uses. It doesn't say, Chayav Adam Likros Es HaMegillah B'Layla V'Likrosa B'Yom. You would have expected it to say, read it at night and read it during the day. And yet, it doesn't. It says, Lishanosa Biyom. A word that the Gemara ultimately concludes means to repeat it. But the Gemara in Daf Dalet and Megillah is bothered initially. What does that mean, Lishanosa Biyom? It's a strange word to use in this context. And the Sfas Emes, or Golduch quotes, says, fascinating pshat. He says, maybe the reason Rabbi Shimon Levi chose this word, Vilishanosa, instead of just saying, read it, and read it, or read it at night and during the day, but rather the Gemara says, read it at night and repeat it during the day. He says it's because the Gemara is looking to stress something here. De'ikar mitzvasa biyom hi. Really, the Megillah is supposed to be read during the day, right? Hallel's during the day, Megillah's during the day. That's it, that's all I gotta do. V'hakriya balayla. So why am I reading it at night? Rak sheyihya biyom kriya shniya. The reading at night is exclusively designed so that my reading during the day should be a second reading. How fascinating. The mitzvah Megillah really should be during the day. But we want you to read it twice. So to make sure that the Megillah reading of the day is a second Megillah reading, you have to first read it at night so that the second, so that when you read it during the day, that's a second reading of the Megillah. Why? So strange. I bedafka want to ensure that my reading of the Megillah by day is a second reading. Unless the idea here is, says Rav Goldwich, that when we are celebrating a victory over Amalek, that victory comes when one is persistent in Avodas Hashem, when one is tenacious in Avodas Hashem, when you do things again and again and again. We don't just do something once and say, maspik, I've done enough. But to succeed in Avodas Hashem, and especially when facing a challenge of an Amalek, it has to be done repetitively. It has to be done consistently, persistently. So we want to read the Megillah not once, but twice to highlight this lesson. And Rav Goldwich suggests that perhaps the reason that Esther requested a second day of battle for the Jews against their enemies was not because they needed it. They were way ahead already. 75,500 enemies dead. An additional 300 is going to make a difference. But the point was this lesson. We don't just do things once in Avodas Hashem, especially when confronting Amalek. We do things persistently. Do it once, do it again. Don't just say, I did it once, that's enough. No, you did it once, you do it again. So please give us tomorrow as well, just to make that point. He suggests is the lesson of Esther requesting an additional day. And how, I wouldn't say ironic, coincidental, or fascinating, that in Parshas Beshalach, when Moshe Rabbeinu tells Yehoshua to go battle Amalek, what does he tell Yehoshua? Vayomer Moshe El Yeshua Bechar Lano Anashim Betsei Hilachem Bamalek Machar Anochi Nitzav Arosha Geva. That term Machar is utilized in plotting the battle with Amalek in Parshas Peshalach as well. That Govich suggests it's not just a one-day deal. It's, well, we'll talk about it today. We'll engage in the battle tomorrow. It's a persistent campaign. It can't just suffice with once. We have to make this an ongoing, consistent battle to succeed against the Amalek. This is Rav Goldwich's theme in his Sefer Meirapanim, one of his many, many Ha'aros and Chidushim on the Megillah. Fascinating, fascinating idea. And of course, this has very, very significant ramifications and applications for our own Avodas Hashem. Because to succeed in Avodas Hashem, one must be persistent. One must be tenacious, relentless. One must persevere. Even if at times I put in an effort and it seems to be sufficient, or I put in an effort and it fails, one has to keep on trying. One has to keep on sticking with it. Even though it's difficult and it's challenging and it can wear somebody down, but that's the challenge of the Amalek, of the Yetzer Hara, to get worn down, to fight against being worn down. There's one of the most famous letters that Putner wrote in his Pachad Yitzchak Igrosuk Savim, is the letter to a Talmud who was becoming somewhat disillusioned, trying so hard time and again and suffering setbacks. And Rav Putner writes to him, Kisheva Yipol Tzadik Vekam, that a Tzadik is one who falls and stumbles seven times and then gets back up yet again. And Rav Putner argues that it's not just that the Tzadik is the one who, despite falling, keeps on trying, but rather, the falling itself is part of what ultimately leads him to succeed. Ultimately leads him to succeed. Now, there's a very fascinating article written by a therapist named Rivka Schoenfeld that you can read on Aish.com. And she there quotes a number of interesting lines from famous figures such as Winston Churchill, whose definition of success is stumbling from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm, or Thomas Edison, who said, "I have not failed, I've just found 10,000 ways that don't work." Either way, the key to success in the Gashmius world is certainly not being disillusioned by having tried and failed, and not being content with having tried once or twice, but being persistent and persevering. Now, Putner writes, he says, the Chavetz Chaim who mastered Lashon Hara, mastered Shmiras HaLashon, how many times did he fail in his journey to get to that point of being the master of Shmiras HaLashon? That we don't know about. We look at the finished product, but we don't know what happened along the way. How many times did he try and refrain from speaking Lashon Hara, and he felt victim to the temptation to speak Lashon Hara? We don't know how many times that happened, but because he was persistent in his Avodas Hashem in fighting that challenge, didn't allow himself to get worn down, he ultimately succeeded. Ultimately succeeded. You know, I have often thought that this past year has been essentially a challenge in this regard as well. Now, when we first started a year ago with the restrictions and the lockdowns and the masking and the distancing, we all thought, okay, for a few weeks, it's a change of pace. It's kind of interesting. I mean, God forbid, I don't mean interesting considering the loss of life, but the restrictions and the change of how we have to conduct ourselves, we figured, okay, we can handle this. It's a few weeks. What's going to be so difficult? But, you know, dragging on for a year and still the same, it becomes tiresome. People get worn down. They get frustrated. They get prone to just forgetting about any sort of effort. And that's human nature. Obviously, sometimes become disillusioned when things become drawn out and persevering is difficult. Being tenacious is a challenge. And in Avodas Hashem, no different. The success in Avodas Hashem, as evident from the description in the Megillah of the battle with Amalek, is that it has to be a battle that is waged patiently, small steps, consistently, one at a time, and ultimately, as Rav Hunter says, even if and when there will be failures along the way and setbacks along the way, but that ultimately is what builds one's ladder towards success. And Be'ezus Hashem, with that lesson of the Purim perseverance, if you will, the Purim persistence and perseverance in pursuing our Avodas Hashem objectives and goals, we should be matzliach to experience a added growth in our ruchnius, in our Avodas Hashem, and in our inspiration in our day-to-day davening and shmiras hamitzvos. Thank you all once again for joining. Wish everyone a wonderful evening and a good rest of the week.